She was sitting there. She said, if you don't like what I'm singing, you know, you can tell me. And I was like, okay.
You were like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that because you're Amy Lou Harris, and I've been in love with you since I was a young, young boy.
Not many 19-year-olds get to record an album of their own songs, and even fewer get the thrill of having a country legend singing on their debut. But the singer-songwriter Dylan LeBlanc's done both, and he's aware of how lucky he's gotten. Dylan's debut album, Pauper's Field, is out now, and we'll get to know Dylan and hear some of his bluesy, world-weary country folk ballads today on Words and Music from Studio A. It's a conversation and performance with Dylan LeBlanc. Hey there, I'm Alisa Ali. Dylan LeBlanc may be young, but he's got the winning combination of talent and good fortune. His father, James LeBlanc, is a session musician at the legendary Fame Studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. Dylan grew up hanging out with the Muscle Shoals players, and the guys taught him a few guitar tricks, and by the time he was 15, Dylan was writing his own songs and playing out as much as he could, even if it meant he had to travel hundreds of miles. Dylan soon caught the attention of the British indie label Rough Trade Records, who signed him and started working on his debut, Pauper's Field. Dylan recorded the album at the same studio where he'd spent so much time as a kid, and got lucky when his manager asked Emmylou Harris to sing with him on the song If the Creek Don't Rise. We'll hear that story and the rest of my conversation with Dylan LeBlanc in a moment, but when Dylan came up to Studio A, he started off with a live track, so let's hear that one. This is Emma Hartley. It's Dylan LeBlanc on FUV.
Walking through the streets, waiting for a call. It's 10th and 24th, and I'm in love. Like you, all I need. When I shake his hands, I go back to the house and fix it up. Now you happy now? Can you breathe? Oh, again, did you toss away your demons like now? Did you close your eyes? Did you see her face? Did you walk along that beach you've been dreaming of? You're my heartbeat. You walk in the door, so you're looking for the things we never got to say. You see, there's a problem here, staring at you, dear. You've been sitting there, running off those trains. And are you happy now? Again, did you toss away your demons and lighten up? Did you close your eyes? Did you see her face? Did you walk along that beach you've been dreaming of? In my heartbeat, I can feel your touch. Don't you leave. In my heartbeat, I can't get enough. In my heartbeat, stay. Please.
Alisa Ali live in Studio A. We just heard a live version of Emma Hartley from Dylan LeBlanc that is found off his new record, Pauper's Field. It's his debut album. But although Pauper's Field is your first full-length album, you've actually been playing music for a really long time.
Yeah, I started playing like live shows when I was like 14. Mm-hmm. Doing like little coffee shops and being like a side man playing in bars with other bands. You know, and then playing, you know, doing my own thing, like acoustic shows and playing, like, you know, 4 hours a night of cover songs and stuff like that to people. And then I, you know, also book shows out on the road and do my own thing for two, three people.
Two or three people. Yeah. Now you got a few more.
Yeah, hopefully so.
Yeah. But your dad, who was a Muscle Shoals session player and songwriter, bought you your first guitar when you were really young. How old were you, like seven?
It was like my seventh birthday, and he pulled it out, bought it. We were there for like a weekend, or he was.
You were where?
In Shreveport, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. I was hanging out with him for the weekend, and he bought me that guitar for my birthday.
You remember that?
Yeah.
At seven?
Yeah,
I kind of don't even remember stuff that happened last week.
Yeah.
But you remember that. That's cool.
Yeah, I remember.
And did he teach you how to play, or did you take lessons, or are you just self-taught?
He taught me like three or four chords.
Uh-huh. That's all you need.
Yeah, and then I would just listen to records and copy it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Try that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what most people do. So you grew up with around a lot of session players, and I understand that you started asking a lot of questions around, you know, 11 or 12. Were there some tips that you learned from these session musicians that you still keep with you today?
I would just really just watch what they were doing and listen to how they would record and hang out in the studio while everybody was recording stuff, and I would ask how to play this and how to play that, and you know, different people would show me different things, like here's a cool little blues lick that you can do when you're doing this, or like here's a cool little thing you can do this, you know, and then finesse, how to play like with a little finesse, which I still haven't mastered the art of yet.
Humble.
But you know, but that, yeah, just basically that's how it went down.
And did you started writing music around that time too, around 11 and 12? I mean, songs, you started writing lyrics around
that
time?
Yeah, like songs I would write, like not good songs, but they were just when I was a kid, just having fun writing songs.
And what were they about? Like little girls and playing in the backyard? That's so wholesome. That's how I'm picturing you.
I think, yeah, I mean, I spent a lot of time by myself when I was growing up, so I would have these really immense daydreams where I could, like, literally, if I could close my eyes, I would forget where I was at because the daydream was so intense or whatever. And anyway, I'd write songs based on, like, imagination and just stupid stuff. And, you know, little girls and playing in the backyard, too. So. I don't know.
So do you think that you had a very different experience growing up in school, especially, than the other kids? Did you feel like, you know, you're running home? Were you running home, like, after school to go play music or hanging out and playing with the rest of the kids at school?
You know, when I was a kid, I would go home and play my guitar. I had like two friends that were really good friends, you know, and I would hang out with them some, you know, on the weekends, and I was real close with my cousins, and I would go spend time at their house and stuff, but my oldest cousin played music too, so I would sometimes go over there and, you know, try to hang out with him, but he was always too cool for me.
Oh, yeah?
He was like, you know, the little cousin trying to tag along, so, you know, but, that's pretty much, yeah, I always played music. That was what I was thinking about and doing all the time.
So you always wanted to be a musician?
Yeah, of course. I didn't have anything else going for me, literally.
Well, you were only 11, so,
yeah,
you know, you had a lot of time ahead of you to make these decisions.
always feel like time is running out and that time is of the essence. So you have to do as much as you can right now because you don't know how much time you got left.
So you're not one for dilly-dallying.
I mean, I do my share of it, you know, just like anybody else. But no, I don't like it. I like to, you know, to do things in a hurry. Sometimes that's a bad thing.
Some people work best under pressure. You know, if they've got a deadline, is that how you feel? Like, if you know you only have a certain amount of time to do something, you just sort of get it done, and then it's great. But if you have a lot of time, you can just sort of pour over, you know, oh, let me try and do this over again. I know I can do this better. I know I can do this better.
I always looked at it as, like, you don't know when your deadline really is, so let's do as much as we can before your deadline comes. So, you're not really guaranteed much time on this earth anyway. So you should probably make the most of it and do. I've been trying like to just enjoy my life because everything like happened so fast. You know, like last year I was just playing in a little casino, like a casino's in Shreveport, and now I'm in New York City, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure how my mind and my is handling it right now, but yeah, but I'm just trying to enjoy myself. I'm working hard on learning how to do that. I'm really trying to learn how, like, I was so frightened to come to New York.
Were you? Why?
I don't know. It was just weird because I've never been to a city like this big in my life, and I don't know why that reaction came, but it's just fear of the unknown. It's always scary, and being anxious. I don't know if it was just because I was so excited that I was scared, or if I was both at the same time. I don't really know. It was just really an experience, and it took a lot to I was just like, please just get on the plane and come to New York. But no, I'm so glad that I'm here because there's nothing like it anywhere. I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah. And so now that you've been here for, how long have you been here for now?
5 or 6 days.
And
I like it.
Yeah?
I like it.
It's not scary? No one's mugged you?
No one's mugged me.
No.
No.
I will later. Okay. I'll pick your pocket, but no mugging.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
You see, that's even sounding good to you. Pickpocketing is sounding good.
Yeah.
All right. I would like to hear another song. Do you think you can oblige?
Yes.
Okay. All right. What do you think? The Death of Outlaw Billy John?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. A live version of The Death of Outlaw Billy John here in Studio A. Dylan LeBlanc is with us, and that is a song from his debut album, Pauper's Field. I'm Elise Alley talking with Dylan. So pleased that he's in Studio A with us today. So you were talking before about having feeling like you don't have a lot of time. In fact, you've got one of the songs. One of your songs is If Time Was for Wasting. So you know, there is a finite amount of time that people have. Nobody knows exactly how long, you know, we're put on this earth for. However, when you go into the studio, normally you've got to pay and book studio time. Did you have that experience or no? Because I know you were signed to the label by the founder, right?
Yeah, Jeff Travis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So was he? Great man. Did he hook you up like, you know what, Dylan, just take as much time in the studio as you want?
No.
Or did you have a finite amount of time in the studio?
You know, I grew up in the studio that we cut this record in. And it's almost like a family business. Like, I know it's like Rick Hall is the founder of the studio. They cut like really great R&B records in there in the early 60s and late 50s. And, you know, so I grew up, I recorded like my first song there cause my father worked there and, you know, I really took advantage of them in that regard of like, can I please use your studio? And, they have owned some of my publishing, so it gets paid back through my publishing. You know, mm-hmm. like when records sell, you know, they'll get their money back. So it's like a red balance. So I can go in there pretty much anytime I want and record anything, which is really cool, which is so nice. And it's a great recording studio.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a wonderful, it looks like somebody's basement from the 70s. That's the best way I heard it described.
Yeah. Do you buy into any of like, do you prescribe to the fact that, or the idea or notion that if you go into a studio with so much history that maybe some of it could sort of seep into your recording in some way?
You know, possibly. I know that there's a really good vibe there all the time. The vibe is, there's seriously like some things going on, you know, like in that studio, because the feeling in there, you get a different kind of feeling when you walk inside than from when you, you know, were at the door, because it's just it's a great place. I love it.
Yeah.
I spent so much time there. I dropped out of high school, actually, when I was 16. And, that's where I spent most of my time after that, is at that studio, just recording songs. Like, I think they probably have so many of my songs in their computer.
So your dad was cool with you dropping out of school at 16?
I was just, I was struggling, you know, with some problems like drinking and stuff like that, and, you know, drugs. And I didn't really care about school. I just wanted to play music.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to a rehabilitation center and got cleaned up, and then came back to Muscle Shoals and stayed there for a while from Shreveport because I was living down there. And so from the period of time from like when I was 16 up until now, I just been nothing but just recording and writing and doing those kind of things.
I've heard a lot of people say that, you know, writing music and playing music is just sort of a form of therapy. And, you know, a lot of musicians I've met pretty frequently, they'll say, you know, if I did not have music, if I didn't have this outlet, I don't know what would have happened to me. I mean, do you think that, like, you know, playing your guitar and sort of writing your thoughts down on paper and making it rhyme?
Yeah, I'm definitely no different than any other musician or artist, and you know, that likes to, you know, play their music, and that helps them. I'm the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. And, you know, on the other side of that is, you know, obviously music, recorded music, and listening to it as a, you know, as a fan. It's definitely obviously gotten a lot of people, including myself, and I'm sure pretty much everybody listening out there, through some hard times, and accompanied through good times as well. Mm-hmm. So cool that you have this Muscle Shoals network of people. I understand that you're friends with Spooner Oldham?
Well,
you know him, or yeah, are you friends with him?
I don't know if I'm like friends with him.
Oh, okay.
I see him at like parties and stuff, and I would go as far to say that he's always super nice to me, and he's one of the most humble people in the world. To be as, you know, have so much to have the notoriety that he has.
Yeah.
He doesn't care. You know, he'll play with anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and he's just a humble guy. He'll mm-hmm. sit and talk to you for hours. You could ask him any question. I've asked him all the stupid questions. Like, you know, what was it like playing with Janis Joplin? And what was it like, you know, having a song recorded? You know, just ask him all kinds of questions. And he's probably like, kid, get the...
No. He's such a nice guy, though. I really was... so into the work that he did with Drive-By Truckers. Did you get into that?
Yeah, I know.
That was so good.
Isbell lives in Sheffield, Jason Isbell, mm-hmm. and I see him all over town, like all the time. Like, I'll go out. He hangs out at DP's. Like, he has an apartment right up above DP's.
What's DP's?
It's just a bar.
Oh.
And like a little pool hall. And mm-hmm. I'll walk in there every now and again. He'll be shooting pool, or smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
Drinking a glass of whiskey.
Yeah, since we're name dropping and everything, Emmylou Harris.
Yeah.
Oh my God, how did you, Emmylou Harris guest vocals on this record with you, how did you manage to get her involved?
Well,
did you know her?
No, I didn't know her, but my manager managed her for a long, long time
mm-hmm.
before he managed me. So they're really good friends. So it wasn't like, you know, she like heard my music, was like, oh, I'd like to sing on that. No, it wasn't that cool. I wish it was, but that's just not the case.
It's super cool that she's on the record.
I know,
period.
Right. But she Monty, my manager, was just like called her up and was like, I'm gonna send you a few songs, and if you like them, then we'd love for you to sing on them. So he sent her If the Creek Don't Rise, and she liked it. And she came in, we were at Trina Shoemaker's Red Barn in Nashville, where we did like little added recordings and additional recordings, and like cello and stuff like that, that just to make it more full and better than it was. But she came in like for an hour and sat there, and so sweet, so graceful, such a good woman, just powerful woman,
mm-hmm.
just a good vibe, you know.
Yeah.
And very humble, you know. She was like, she was sitting there, she said, if you don't like what I'm singing, you know, you can tell me. And I was like, okay.
You were like, I'm not gonna do that.
Yeah, I'm not gonna do that, because you're Emmylou Harris, and I've been in love with you since I was a young boy. In love with her music.
Yeah,
it's
of
just
course.
So wonderful.
Yeah.
Pieces of the Sky was one of my favorite records that she ever did. That came out in like 75.
Uh-huh.
and that song Too Far Gone, that was one of the first songs that really struck me. I think Billy Sherrill wrote that song, and he's a Muscle Shoals boy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was this music that you'd found just through, like, your parents' record collection, your grandparents' record collection, or?
Yeah, my grandmother, she had a record collection, and my grandfather, before he died, you know, they had collected all these records.
Oh, my God. I heard a crazy story about, oh, no, it was a great-grandfather.
Yeah, that was my great-grandfather.
Can you tell it? Because it's really interesting.
Sure.
Or just fascinating.
My great-grandfather, well, my grandmother, this is just stories that my grandmother heard. I don't know why they wanted to elaborate on that, but I guess it is a pretty cool story. But my great-grandfather, his name was Baylus Joseph, and he was, you know, kind of a mean guy, kind of crazy, and this guy from, he was family with the Cloud Brothers. He was kind of lurking around my great-grandfather's house, kind of looking at my grandmother, kind of funny, like he was kind of liking her or something.
Like he fancied her.
Yeah, so, you know, my great-grandfather started noticing, and he said, if you don't get off of my property, I'm gonna kill you right now. And, so, you know, she was like, the guy, Mr. Cloud, or whatever his name was like, no, I'm not gonna, he didn't believe him.
Was he a famous bandit?
I don't know if he was a famous bandit.
Like, was he
bandit.
A bad guy?
I mean, he
was bad because he was hitting on your grandmother, great-grandmother.
Right. He was bad. He was bad. I mean, I'm sure they shot up a few places, you know. So, but my grandfather was a bad, not, he wasn't, you know, a saint, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, he said, if you take one step through my gate, I'm going to shoot you dead. And he didn't believe him, so he opened the gate, stood, you know, he was calling his bluff, and my grandfather shot him, killed him right there.
Oh, my God.
And then, I guess, like, the next day, my grandfather was going to leave town, you know, head out, and they were in the wagon, him and my grandmother, and I think my grandfather. Anyway, they got ambushed. And they shot my great-grandfather, and then the horses took off running, and my grandmother got away.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, anyway.
That's just a crazy story. I'm sorry. I know that was really personal. I didn't mean to.
No, it wasn't personal at all.
I didn't mean to, like.
It's one of those stories that I heard, you know, when I was growing up that I thought was kind of interesting.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, I would love to get another song out of you.
Okay.
Would that be okay?
Of course.
All right, let's hear some music now, live in Studio A, Dylan LeBlanc.
Thank you.
a live version of No Kind of Forgiveness from Dylan LeBlanc here in Studio A. He's got a new record out called Pauper's Field. It is his debut. You must check it out. It's very beautiful. You've got just such a beautiful voice. How long have you been singing? Did you start singing when you were a kid too?
Well, I went to church, you know, with my mother. And when I lived with her when I was really young, and when I was like 5 and 6, and she would take us to church every Sunday, and that's when we started singing. Everybody sings in church.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we go to went to a real Southern Baptist church, and we'd sing the hymnals, and I'd always get in trouble for talking or something like that. The preacher would get a spanking in his office or something. It's pretty rough. But I don't know.
So you've been singing your whole life.
Yeah, I've sang a lot.
And you don't feel self-conscious singing in front of people?
Yeah, I feel more self-conscious about my voice than anything. I don't think that I'm quite there yet with a good voice, but I'm trying the best that I can.
Did your voice change?
Yeah.
I mean, it's had to have changed.
It's changed a lot.
Yeah. What do you think the change is? Or your singing style?
I really don't know. You know, I always wanted to be a good falsetto singer, and I'm really not. Like, it's really hard for me. I sing from my throat, which is really weird. Like, cause you know, I have a hard time. Like I breathe kind of weird, so I have to breathe and then push the notes out. You sing in your stomach and your throat, so it kind of. I always feel like it sounds kind of weird or something.
Really? That's so funny. It's all in your head, because I think it sounds beautiful.
Well, thank
you. I think you have a really, really gorgeous voice, and sounds like you're singing from the heart.
Thank you. I definitely try my best I can.
Yeah. I'd love to have one more song to close out this session.
Yes.
Would that be cool?
Of course.
What do you think?
Cody Creek.
All right. Let's do it. Right. Dylan, thank you so much. For stopping by Studio A, and we wish you much luck and success, and I hope to be seeing you around.
Okay.
Real
Sounds
soon.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Said, Dorothy, come and get me. Will you hide my family? They're hanging in the willow tree down by Cody Creek. Hell had no fear on me.
Dylan LeBlanc, live in Studio A with Coyote Creek. And before we go, let's hear a song from the album. This is If the Creek Don't Rise with guest vocals from Emmylou Harris on WFUV.
'Cause love is like water, like it's a road. You can drown underneath the surface to keep your head alive. Let me love you again, I think we'll make it this time. Oh, good Lord's willing, the creek don't rise.
Dylan LeBlanc on FUV. Dylan's debut album is Pauper's Field. Aaron Wilson and John Stein engineered the studio session, and words and music from Studio A was produced today by Nora Flaherty. Visit our archives at WFUV.org to hear this program and more exclusive conversations and performances. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Elisa Ali for WFUV 90.7 FM in New York.